Justin, I'm throwing it to you. You said you had something to tell me, and I've been waiting. You know, we had, you know, getting ready the episode doc and everything like that. And I've done nothing but think about what it could be that you had to tell me.
So I need to know about hot dogs, right? What constitutes eating a hot dog? And when you're eating a hot dog, what makes it one hot dog versus two hot dogs?
I see what you're saying. So, like, are you asking me? Because, all right, let's just be candid about the hot dog update.
Our hot dog update for this week, yes.
Yes, I have eaten 24 in the year of 2025.
That's pretty good.
So far, you have eaten, and you've written down here, 77 or 78.
I don't know the answer. What's the right answer? I don't know.
Are you saying, like, because are you, let me just guess what I think you're, there's all right. One of two things I think you're going for. The first thing is that you have, like, a foot-long hot dog, and you're curious if that counts as two because it's so large.
So that's one hot dog. It's a foot-long hot dog, but it's one hot dog,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct. And you can, like, denote that, you know what I mean? Like, because right. I'm really excited if you got a foot-long hot dog, but that is one hot dog.
Right, yeah, that's clearly one hot dog.
Okay, then the other thing, I'm actually thinking about this now, and I'm going to say this probably wouldn't count in our counter, but I did have a foot-long corn dog at a convention one time. But they were, like, corn dogs made from a fucking food truck. So it was, like, battered and fried in front of you, and you're holding it, and it's, like, literally dripping with oil and whatever. And I knew for a fact, based on its structural integrity, that it was not a foot-long hot dog inside, but it was 2 6-inch corn dogs.
That's pretty funny. It was a little floppy at that.
It was a little like that.
Now, does a corn does a corn dog count as a hot dog? Would you count that on your list?
I wouldn't count it without consulting with you.
Okay, that makes sense because because this is where it gets.
Part of me says yes, part of me also says no.
Because we've never defined a hot dog here because.
Yes, because the only time we have like talked about it is like you said, like, okay, like sausage doesn't count, like a bratwurst doesn't count. Whatever.
A Polish sausage, those aren't real. Those aren't real.
Correct.
At all.
They're delicious, but I would agree that they do not count under our hot dog sort of list.
So my wife and I went to a tiki bar in River Grove this weekend. I couldn't tell you the name of the tiki bar, but it was in River Grove. There's not that many tiki bars in Chicagoland area to begin with. You can narrow it down. It's like Mahiki Hiki or something like that.
Wait. I think this is the one my friend works at. Go on.
Oh, wait, your friend works here? This is awesome.
their family used to own or they used to work there. Their family owns it. Go on.
Okay. So we were driving by and there's this hot dog place called Gene and Jude's. And my wife was like, oh, Gene and Jude's is like a famous hot dog place. They have like some of the best hot dogs in Chicago. And I was like, I got to get this. On the way home, we're going to get a hot dog from Gene and Jude's. And I looked at their menu and they basically have a very short menu. They have hot dog, double hot dog with fries, order of fries, and a corn roll tamale. And they basically put the fries like on top of your hot dog. Like it's kind of like they wrap it up together.
Oh,
it's
I see that. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. So after we had a few drinks at this tiki bar, and by the way, the tiki bar it's literally just like a tiki bar. They don't really serve dinner. They had we had a couple like chips and stuff like that. So I was thoroughly hungry.
Might not be the one I'm thinking of then. Anyway, go on.
Oh, okay. But there wasn't any food there. It was just like, whatever. So I'm hungry and I'm like, I really want this hot dog. So I have a big boy appetite and I get to Gene and Jude's and it's like one of those places that it's not a restaurant that can really sit in. They have a couple of counter spaces, but it's like one of those like greasy four items on the menu, bunch of people behind there, bunch of fries being cooked or whatever. It's like the hot dog
place. The website says no seats, no ketchup, no pretense, no nonsense.
Yeah. I felt bad if I asked for ketchup.
I don't think they would I don't think they would serve it to you. I get irritated when places are like so weird about it. It's like,
but
specifically
with one of your core items, actually three of the items on your menu have fries in them. Like you would assume
fries is the
you need
ketchup for that. Yes.
Ketchup. What are you going to put on the ketchup? You just like, I got to eat fries with something like ketchup or give me an aioli. If you're going to be like that, give me an aioli.
Of course. Yeah.
So I ordered the double dog with fries, assuming that I would get two hot dogs. And I, in fact, did get two hot dogs, but it was all tied up on one
with one bun.
So, Peter, my question to you, is that two hot dogs because I had two links or one hot dog because the hot dog is the bun with the meat in the middle?
Well, okay. Okay. This actually then brings in a question, two of the hot dogs that I had this week.
Okay.
As we talked about on our podcast 1 week ago, you are served, you are, when you buy hot dogs, you buy 10 hot dogs and 8 buns. That's a new observation. Right. No one's ever noted that before.
No, not a single human. No.
Me and Elena have been having ground turkey for like tacos and stuff like for dinner all week.
That's good.
And I'm having, we got those lower calorie tortillas. So I ran out of buns on Friday for the hot dogs. So instead I put hot dogs in a tortilla with pickles and, you know, tomato and mustard. That is not a bun. It was delightful. It was delicious. Does that not count as a hot dog? Because to me, I think it counts as a hot dog.
I do too.
And then by that logic, I will say that the hot dog is about the link. It is not about the ret. That's
good.
Mythical morning.
Joke. Okay.
The hot dog is about how many links you have and not about how many. Like the fact that you had 2-in-1 bun, I'm going to say that is 2 hot dogs.
They called it a double dog.
It's a double dog.
It's 2 dogs. Dog. I had 2 hot dogs. And the method of how you did it. Okay, then I'm at 78 is my answer.
Was it good? I bet that place was great.
It was good. It was like that, like typical, like when you bite into it, it like snaps. You know, when people talk about the hot dog snap, it was like that.
I love the hot dog snap.
But I am going to be this person. I'm sorry. Don't take my Chicago card for me. I prefer Portillo's hot dogs.
I don't think that would take away a Chicago card from you liking Portillo's,
because Portillo's is like the McDonald's of a hot dog, a Chicago style dog.
Standard.
Yeah. It's like the base one. Whereas a place like Gene and Jude's or like the Wiener Circle, those ones are like the dog place.
Yes.
They
yes.
are the Chicago dog.
I had some from, I'm forgetting the name of it. I can see it. It's on Ogden Avenue. And same thing. Order Chicago dogs and I'm like,
Scoobies?
Oh, these are
with the phallic Scoobies. Little. Yeah, yep. Scoobies. Yeah.
Yep. It's extraordinarily phallic. just. Uncomfortable to look at. It was like the reminder of like, oh yeah, I'm not a Portillo's, which is fine. I like all the hot dogs of all shapes and sizes, but I don't think you're wrong for liking Portillo's. And I go to Portillo's once a year usually. I go on my birthday every single year.
Oh,
and get 2 jumbo dogs. It's the best.
I used to go and see jumbo dogs. They're not traditional Chicago style dogs, but they are what I get when I go to Portillo's.
Well, I mean, like, I like more of the snap. I like, they're more filling to me. Otherwise, I would probably have to eat like 4 of them.
I prefer the ratio of hot dog yes. to toppings to with that topping. Rather than just getting like the regular Chicago one. Because the jumbo ones are like, again, they're like a fatter hot dog.
That's more of like a sausage.
Yeah. But it's still, a hot dog.
They only count as one because they're hot dogs and there's one link.
There's even one link.
Like, Yep, because 100%, Justin.
I haven't done it this year, but sometimes you know you just do the thing where you just like have a hot dog and then you just like cut it up in little circles and you dip it into the ketchup and the mustard, and then you put the 2 ketchup and mustard blots next to each other, so like the middle is like the happy area.
I mix them up.
I like
the orange. It's the best. It's the best.
I like to do them separately, so the middle is mixed up, and then if I'm like, I feel like this is gonna be a mustard
yeah,
roll.
Yeah, yeah, kind of a mustard bite.
I can get my thing there. So, yep, I am at 78 hot dogs. Gene and Jude's, would recommend. It was like $5 for the double dog with fries. And the
fries, pretty good.
The fries were pretty damn good. They were like just dripping in grease and deliciousness. You know what they needed, though?
A little bit of ketchup. Ketchup. Tipbox! Everyone, welcome back to Hitbox episode number 236. My name is Peter Hunspitek, and joining me as always is my wonderful friend and co-host Justin Makovich. Justin's on spring break.
Spring break.
I haven't seen the film, but I know I'm familiar with Alien. You know, that's his name, right?
Alien?
Yeah.
Alien.
Isn't that his name?
Maybe. Alien?
In Spring Breakers?
I watched it once. I was on a date with someone, and they really liked it, and I really hated it. And I think that was what told us everything we needed to know.
That is, James Franco's character is named Alien.
I'm glad you remember that. I just remember the weird slow-mo shots of him looking at the camera saying, spring break forever.
Is that how you're feeling right now? Is that where you...
Yeah, like just doing a bunch of illegal drugs and just ruining the lives of these four really probably nice young women.
Yeah. Vanessa Hudgens, you know? Selena Gomez. Ashley Benson and Rachel Corinne. I don't know any of these women. That's not true. I know... I know Selena Gomez.
Do you watch Only Murders in the Building? Have you ever watched Only Murders in the Building?
I watched the first three episodes, I think, and when it came out, and I was like, this is fun. And then it just
you didn't get back to it.
Just moved on, yeah.
I recommend it.
I like it.
I've watched it from, like, it's one of the shows that my wife watches, and I just, like, sit on the couch and pretend I'm not interested. But then as the season goes on, my switch gets lower and lower.
I'll say this about Only Murders in the Building. It was surprising to me because it felt like a TV show. In so much of TV, so embarrassed of being TV, you know what I mean? Like every single show is like, we're doing four episodes in one season and each season is 6 years apart. And Only Murders in the Building is like 12 episodes, a new season every year.
Yep.
And
that's what
it
is.
It's not prestige. It's just television. And I appreciate that about it.
And I also like they nail the next week on like the cliffhanger for each mm-hmm. episode.
Oh, yeah.
And you lose the feeling of a cliffhanger when you're watching things like in a marathon format. You're just watching like over and over again. But like having a good cliffhanger for a whole week, just stewing over what's happening. It's feeling is fantastic.
I'll say this, too. That's Steve Martin. I don't know what he's been in before this, but he's going places. I think Steve Martin is one of I would put him in the top five best comedians of all time with Conan O'Brien.
Funny you should mention that. There is literally a scene from Father of the Bride where he freaks out at a grocery store because the amount of hot dogs and the amount of buns are separate from each other. I posted you the link so you can watch it later on your own time. Yeah. But like what perfect synergy we have on this episode today.
Us with Steve Martin and hot dogs. And hey, Martin Short's in there too. A little bit of a reunion for Father of the Bride and Only Murders in the Building. Justin, can I give you a quick preview of what's coming up in the news?
Yes, you may.
I don't need to ask you. I know you're interested. You're on spring break. What else are you doing? Talk with me. Here's what's coming up. Assassin's Creed Shadows is here. We talked about the Metacritic score of it last week. I believe I've played it, and I have things to tell you all about it, Justin. The final Nintendo Direct aired this week for the original Nintendo Switch. Obviously, this upcoming week, we are getting a Switch 2 announcement, which, if you join our Discord server, we're going to talk about the day that it happens, which is when our bonus episodes go up. I'll tell you more about that in a second. And the last thing, the headline that we have here is the Ghost of Yotei gets a surprising update about its release date. We're going to talk about those headlines and more. But before we do, Justin, a reminder that our listeners can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod, like Jay Knoll, GKS, and Josh Durham. Every week, those deluxe podcast producers get an additional 30-minute bonus episode. Like I said, this week we're talking about the Switch 2 reveal. Not reveal, like software reveal, I think, right?
Like the announcement, like we're probably getting pre-orders, we're getting launch titles, we're getting what it does and the specs, we're getting everything.
I am very excited for this because, as we talked about on the show, I was a little underwhelmed by the original trailer that they released. That was just like the announcement of, hey, this is the Switch 2. Like, it felt a little passive aggressive, but like, fucking fine. Fine. You guys want to see this so bad? Here. Thanks for ruining it for yourselves. You know what I mean? But so this is like games and stuff like that. So I think I'm going to be excited to talk about it. And, you know, we'll talk about it a little bit next week, but on the bonus episode is where that's the main bulk of that conversation is really going to be. But if you can't do that, that's fine. You can rate this episode in your podcast player of choice or follow us on Twitter at HitboxPod. Justin, will you join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go.
Metacritic Roundup.
Just one game in the Metacritic Roundup this week. Adam Fall. This is a kind of survival craft 'em up, kind of Fallout-esque game by Rebellion. On the PC, it scored a 73. On the Xbox Series X, a 75. And on the PS5, also a 75, unscored on the PS4 and Xbox One, though it is coming to both platforms. Justin, have you heard of Adam Fall? Are you going to play it? It's going to be on Game Pass. It is on Game Pass, rather. And what do you think of these scores?
I have to admit, like... survival games are like interesting to me, but I just can't like get into them more or less. It's just like there's always another one, and This one, I think, is set in a pretty cool, like, nuclear wasteland, correct?
Yes, it is. It's set in England. It's apparently a very, like, English, like, British game.
Get your bangers and mash.
It is an alternate history. Yeah. You ever have potatoes and mash?
Potatoes and mash. Wait, isn't...
Or peas and mash? What is it?
Bangers and mash? Isn't that, like, sausages and potatoes?
There's something mash where it's, like, mashed potatoes and mashed peas with gravy on it. It's fucking nasty, dude. Yeah, I'll eat anything.
I was gonna say drippy peas.
Drippy peas. Get them drippy peas out here.
You ate balut.
See your drippy peas.
Drippy peas.
I balut, and I thought that the fucking mashed peas was. I would not put that in my mouth again. I would eat balut again. Yes. Basically.
Mushy peas.
Mushy peas, that's what it is.
They're called dried marrow fat peas. Ew.
Adam Paul is like it's an alternate history. I don't know much about this. I know that in like the 50s or 60s, there was a nuclear power plant in the UK and there was a fire in it. And I think it shut down. In the alternate history, the fire like causes a giant explosion and there's like radioactive activity and whatever. And like there's mutants and all sorts of stuff from the results of that. So a lot of people are sort of comparing this to what is that game that soccer too, which was about all that in Russia and all that. This game is a little bit different. It seems like it's a little bit less like immersive simi than that game was. But So are you following this game at all? This was in some of those like Xbox presentations and stuff like that, I think.
I followed as close as the fact that I was thinking about picking it up for Fantasy Critic, and I'm glad I didn't with like the reviews. It's a bad game score, but like it wouldn't have gotten me many positive points.
No.
I don't know. Maybe this is something I could try out if I do like a hyper thing during the summer where I just start playing a bunch of games on Game Pass and just testing them out using cloud streaming, which is actually pretty nice. When you're using that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I know it's like not quite just like a survival-y game, but like it does have a lot of those flavors to it. So I don't know if this is something that I want to like dive into.
Yes. And I will say this as well. It seems like it's pretty short. I saw people saying like beat this in 15 hours. Like, okay, that's actually super digestible for me.
Yeah, it seems like a pro.
Yes. I am in the same boat for me where I'm like, when I inevitably get Game Pass, I might check this out. I am not going to prioritize this over Avowed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like I'm interested in Avowed. I want to play that game. So I will go there first and then I can get to Adam Fall if I have the time and the interest. Because it does look cool. And with people saying like it's not that overwhelming, it's not like some like super deep RPG or anything like that, you know, there's a lot to it and it is cool and it's good, but like it's not like some gigantic thing that like requires 60 hours of your time or whatever like so many games are nowadays, right? This is just like this is a perfectly reasonably sized game, you know.
What was that game that I played, the nuclear one when you're in Russia? What was that game I played a couple years ago?
Is it not Stalker?
No, it was like nuclear game in Russia.
Game set in Russia.
Alternate history.
Atomic Heart?
Yeah, Atomic Heart. I really enjoyed the heck out of that game. I know this game doesn't quite seem to be that one because that one kind of became by the end a very action-y game, but there is something
like
about
BioShock, right?
Yeah. But there is just something about like this kind of setting that I find to be very fascinating and interesting. And again, something that, again, to be honest, a 15-hour game is a pro for me, something that I would probably check out more so than it being a thing that you live your entire life playing.
100%. And with this, it's interesting you mentioned like action. I imagine this game's action ramps up as you go. But to my understanding, like there's like patrols, like there's like bandits that are like walking around and stuff like that. But you don't have to fight them. And it's not the sort of thing where it's like you don't have to fight them. You just have to avoid them. Like you just walk right past them and they're not going to attack. They'll like acknowledge you and you can acknowledge them. But like they're not going to attack you unless you are aggressive at them first, which I think is kind of cool. Like so many like it's funny. I'm playing Assassin's Creed Shadows and like, if you just walk near bandits, they're going to fuck you up.
No matter what.
Like on site, you know what I mean? And so to have sort of a more complicated system than that, I think is kind of interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Because the game is not like, yes, there is shooting in it. Yes, there is like melee stuff in it, but it's not like necessarily about combat. You know what I mean? Like combat is in it. It's just not like that's one of the paths you can take.
Yeah. Yeah. Looks good though. Interesting.
Yeah. Justin, that's all that's in the Metacritic roundup, but I've played a lot of video games this week. I think you've probably played some video games this week, being that you are on spring break now.
Yeah. Well, and I'm a little addicted to this thing called Xenoblade Chronicles.
Tell me about it. Tell me all about it.
All right, so I just hit the 29-hour mark on Xenoblade Chronicles, and that's a big deal because at the 29-hour mark of Xenoblade Chronicles, you finally unlock your mech.
Okay, so you just got it at 29 hours?
29 hours, I just got my mech.
Okay.
And it was a little anticlimactic, I found, because it comes so late, and it's kind of like one of these things, like you finish a story beat. I'm not even going to call it a big story beat. You finish a story beat, and then your like commander who's been like kind of giving you tasks goes, yeah, you should probably think about getting that scale license certification. So you have to basically do all of these like stupid like missions where you just like fight eight of these things, find this random item, fight a rare creature. None of them really hard. It was just like a bunch of checklisty stuff. So you get all these certifications, and then you go to take the exam. And the guy's like, all right, you ready to take this exam? And I was like, I don't really think about anything that you just told me. And it's like, he's basically like, are you willing to help anyone who needs your help? And I was like, yes. And he's like, all right, great. You got your scale license. You now get this big mech. And you get a mech, which is cool. But then things start hitting my head like, you got to watch out for insurance on your mech. And you got to like pay for all the parts for your mech. And then you get into your mech and that bitch doesn't even fly. You just, it turns into like a car. So you move a little bit faster, but like it did not change combat the way that it did in Xenoblade Chronicles. Was that 3?
There were not mechs in 3. There was like the fusion that you did in 3.
Remember that game kept escalating in the first like 15 hours. Like you first like got these like link powers. Then you got your Ouroboros abilities.
Ouroboros. That'll sound.
And like
hold on a second. Hold on. Wait.
Oh.
Hear that, Noah? Lance wants something a bit meatier.
There you go. Go on.
But like, that game like escalated the combat, so like every time you got a new power, it like felt like you unlocked something new that like kind of changed the way the core gameplay was. This feels like I could ignore playing the mechs and never like be upset by it. And like I know that for a fact because I was in my mech car running around because I go faster, and I was following the little orb that tells you where to go to get these like unlockable things I was looking for. And it basically had me go up a tree on this path, and I could not get my mech in that place to go up the tree because it was too big. So I couldn't even do like the core like exploration stuff with it while I was in the mech. And it just kind of feels like such a, this will be fun once you beat the game, because I did some searching and you could eventually make it fly, but that's once you beat the final story mission.
Oh,
so that's very Horizon Zero Forbidden West kind of like upgrade path with that. So I don't know. I was just a little disappointed by that. Like I was kind of excited how it would make me feel like this big hulking thing that I was finally formidable to fight against these creatures that were like massive walking around the map. But like it doesn't feel that like special or unique. But regardless, I'm addicted to this game because it's such like a good gameplay loop. Even though the story's not there, it just keeps making you want to play things and explore things. There was this story mission that you basically had to get all these like requirements in order to play the next story mission. And one of them was to explore 20% of this new region. And like so far, I had barely been in this region. I had one like fast travel point unlocked in it. I was barely in that region. And the reason being is because everything was like 10 levels over where I was. So I didn't want to go through that area. But in order to get the story mission, which was below the level I was currently at, they made you explore this level with all these high-powered things. But they didn't want you to, like, do anything other than, like, feel like you were this newcomer exploring this uncharted territory. It's not that you walk in there and have this power fantasy about you like destroying everything. They wanted you to scout out and see like what was here. So by the time you came back and eventually were at a higher level, then you felt like you kind of knew the land and you were like ready to fight it. So like, I don't know. I think they do some cool things and they really make it feel like a major part of that game is not the story as much as it is exploring this new world and finding out like the cool hidden places in this world and slowly but surely extending your network around where like you can fast travel to and like what like monsters and creatures and things that you can find. So like it's very addictive in that way. It reminds me of a much better structured version of the dark, what was the the underglow place in Tears of the Kingdom?
The depths.
And like how in the depths, I found a lot of fun making my little like motorcycle and hoverboard to like travel around that whole place and get all those like glow roots or whatever. That was really fun, but it felt like I was kind of doing that on my own without someone telling me to do this. This one, it feels like it's like essential to the gameplay to kind of like go around and explore and find these like waypoints to like expand your understanding of the map. So I am pretty far into it. I would say I'm probably about halfway through according to like the chapters that I'm in. I'm currently on story mission 7 and I think there's 15 of them.
Okay, yeah, so you're getting through that.
Yeah. The one thing about that game that I feel like, and this is the same thing for the original Xenoblade Chronicles, I didn't really feel that way with the most recent one. I feel like I'm doing something wrong with the combat because every once in a while you get to this boss that's like level 19. I'm level 25. I feel like I should steamroll over this thing and I get through like a fourth of its health and my whole team gets wiped. And I don't like... I could go in and like customize every armor piece or every moveset of every character that I have, but there's so many characters, so many movesets, so many armor pieces, so many weapons, so many classes that it gets a little overwhelming. And I don't even know if it's me not optimizing it as much as if it's just like kind of like vague and they don't really like explain that kind of like gameplay combat stuff to you as well as they could. But after I was fighting this one boss that, again, I was like 6 levels higher than it just kept wiping me, they like had a menu that popped up like in a like a fighting game being like, hey, do you want us to lower the difficulty on this boss battle alone? And
oh,
it's like,
okay, that's kind of cool.
It's not going to lower the rest of the game. And I was like, yeah, first they said no. And then I fought it like 5 more times. And I was like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to lower this difficulty. And then the fight was still tough, but it was like much more manageable to the way I was playing the game.
Sure. That makes sense. And then did you keep it there or did you let it just go back to normal?
Well, once you're done with it, it only changes that boss's level. So the boss was level 19 and then it changed it to level 14, but it doesn't change anything else about the game, only the boss's level.
Okay. So that's actually kind of a cool thing. I've never seen that before, have you?
I mean, in like fighting games, it's pretty common if you're ever playing like a fighting game story, like the first couple times, like you'll play something and they're like too good. And then eventually they get like shitty. So it's like a lot easier for you to like beat them. But I'm glad they did that because a couple of these roadblocks would have been like major stopping points for me playing the game and my progression. And I even remember when I was playing the original Xenoblade the first time before I played the one on the Switch, I got to a similar boss that I just couldn't beat no matter what I did. But this one gave me that, so it like did not hurt my progress, and it kept making me go forward and keep playing the game.
Okay, well, there you go. That's cool. So you think you're about halfway through?
Yeah.
You said?
I'm probably going to slow down a little bit on it because it's like one of those things that at a certain point, it's like very similar with a lot of the stuff that I'm doing. So like, I don't think I'm going to be playing another like 15 hours over the rest of spring break. I'll probably like try some new stuff, but it'll be there for the rest of the year for me. And I definitely want to finish it.
Sure. It's one of those like slow burn games too.
Yeah.
I imagine. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's how the other one was. Justin, I beat Resident Evil 3 Remake. I replayed that this week. Sometimes you just got to get it out of your system. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was going to replay all of Resident Evil 4, the original, but I realized I didn't have time for that. I was like, I've got like 3 days. And I was like, Resident Evil 3 Remake is really short. I beat it in just over 4 hours. It's like really, really short. And it's a good game. I mean, like, it's interesting. I like it because I just wanted exactly what that was. I remember when it came out, people being really disappointed with it because it was so bare bones. And that is super legit. Me not having that context. And also I bought it for $10 on like from GameStop like 2 years ago. Like, it's a pretty good deal for that, you know, but at $60 when it came out in 2020, like, I don't know. Also, it's insane. This game came out like April 1st or something like that, like 2020. And the fucking first line in the game is like, this pandemic has, the death toll has reached an unprecedented amount. Like, it's this horrifically aged thing for, like, I just, for when that game came out, just talking about like a deadly virus that, and they say like the first words are like the deadly pandemic or something like that. And it's all, it starts with an FMV. So it's all just like footage that they're making look like real news footage, but it's like actors and stuff like that. Very uncomfortable for just when that came out. It's just interesting to see.
But, yeah. If I'm correct, that game is way more actiony than like survival horror, right?
Yeah, 100%. It fully leans into that.
And is there a lot of replayability in it? Like, I know in Resident Evil 2 Remake, you had like the two stories that eventually, if you like played each of them, it would like come to like an even different kind of story that you could do.
No, not really. So it's because, yeah, you're right. Resident Evil 2 Remake has the A scenario and the B scenario, one with Leon, one with Claire. And with those two characters, they access different parts of the police station. They have different, like totally different stories and all that. Whereas this just has the one scenario. The replayability with it, I think it's kind of a good gateway into speedrunning, because it is so short and because it's so clear the way that it can be optimized. You know what I mean? So like, if you're interested in seeing how fast you can beat the game, especially because at the end of Resident Evil games, it gives you a score, like a grade based on like how fast you were, how many times you died, like that sort of thing. But yeah, like that is where the replayability of it comes from. Not like, oh man, there's all this new content, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, but it's good. It's good.
One I still haven't played. I think I do have it purchased. That one of these days I will probably play it. But yeah, I don't know. I have to be in the mood for Resident Evil, even though it's become one of my favorite series. Minus four.
I was gonna say it's one of my favorites. It's one of my favorites, and I was happy to have just like I said, just get it out of my system. I'm just gonna play it and move on. I finished Split Fiction with Josh this week. Have you gotten any further in that game with Claire?
Not very much. I gotta say it's frustrating for both of us in different ways. There are often many times where she gets frustrated by the controls and some of the stuff that you have to do, and like the visual language is kind of rough sometimes with like telling you where you have to go and what you have to do. We recently just beat chapter one where it's like you're the stealth ninjas or the cyber ninjas. And there's this like scene where you had to like, I was shooting and she was driving the car, and it was kind of like unclear about like where she always had to go or how she had to do stuff or like that kind of stuff. So she was getting really frustrated to the point where we had to pass the controller around. And then I was like, I was doing the driving and then she was doing the shooting. And then we got to a different part with the shooting, got like a little bit challenging. And then she's like, and then I like switched the controllers with her again. So there's that stuff that I honestly don't think that opening level is a good opening level for someone like Claire to get into it and to like really connect with it, because it is much more actiony. But then the thing that I'm getting frustrated with it is like a lot of this stuff, it seems like some of the health bars are way too long and you're doing the same things way too much, and like for most boss battles and stuff like that. And like it's just kind of repetitive to a certain point, not in terms of like, because you're always doing something different, but like in some of these individual encounters, they just last a tick too long. And they lose my interest before, like, I finish them. And I don't know. It's just not – I don't feel compelled to play, because also the story is not great.
Yes. I think we talked about this last week, or the last time we talked about Split Fiction, where, like, if the story were worse, I think I would have liked that. Because then at least you're, like, having fun with it. Because you're like, this is fucking bad. And the story with this is just like bland and forgettable.
Yeah.
Me and Josh like talk over it, like just like, talked through the whole thing. We try to give it like, you know, a shot at the beginning, but just like whatever. To the point where it cuts back to like what's going on in the company, like in the building that you guys are like in as like the adventure is going on, and like something happened and we were like, who the fuck are these characters? we must have seen them at some point, but like they're acting like there's like this thing going on that like we just have no clue about. But I think with the boss fights, it is that is the thing that overstays its welcome usually, because usually you kind of know what you need to do, but the cycle takes a little bit too long of waiting around, like dodging attacks and whatever, before you're able to like actually do that thing. That said, and I also agree that it is the difficulty is tough. It's a lot more action focused and it does not stop doing that. It is that way throughout the whole thing. That said, the final boss fight is pretty great. Visually, it is really, really cool because of sort of the way that they mix, without like spoiling things, like the way they mix the different elements of the game together, I think is pretty, pretty cool, because it's this sort of thing like, well, what do? You just have them go to one final story? And it's like, no, what if you kind of like I said, like remix a lot of the older elements that you've sort of experienced throughout the whole game. So I liked that a lot. At the end of the day, I'm not sure if it's better than It Takes Two. I think it is. I think it's more fun than It Takes Two. But I think like in terms of the mechanical stuff and the fact that like all the side content, I think is like that's the best. Those are my favorite things in the game. And there is that gag. Did you get to that phone bit? You know what I'm talking about?
Not yet.
OK, you are like right there if you're talking about being on the motorcycle and stuff like that. But it's I like it. I am less blown away by it than It Takes Two. But that also might be because it felt like It Takes Two came out of nowhere.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's for like, me, I was it's like more of the same.
Who made this? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a very like minor thing, but I think I just, to be honest, get a little bored playing it.
Sure. I also think that it's a little bit less inventive with what it asks the player to do.
Yeah.
Because usually it's not like you have two totally different skill sets. It's usually just like, well, we both attack, but we just attack differently. Or like, oh, we both have guns, but only I can attack the blue ones and only he can attack the red ones. And that's fine. It's just like less interesting than It Takes Two is like, well, I have the fuel, you have the gun. You know, so I have to, you know, light the thing on. I have to like cover it. It's like honey, I think honey. And then you've got a match. And so you light the match on fire, or like I've got this, you have this. They have to work just like together. Whereas like in this one, it's just like my power is just I'm going to take this route. Your powers are going to take that route.
All in all, how long did it take you to play?
I'll say this. You are at the beginning.
Oh, I know. Like we literally got through the first chapter.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. 10 hours, 15.
Okay. Okay.
Between there, it's reasonable. We did it in 3 or 4 sessions.
Okay.
Have you seen the stuff about the laser hell thing?
Mm-mm.
There is a secret level. There is a secret level in the game that is like a super difficult laser section. That's all platforming that you have to like be, you have to platform perfectly for like 90 seconds straight. And if you die at all, you get sent back to the very beginning of it. So we finished the game and we had heard about this level and we were like, well, we got to check this out. So we went to the area, like it's missable. Like you have to enter a code into an elevator to find it basically. We get down there and we were pretty confident. We were like, I think we can probably finish this. Maybe an hour, maybe 45 minutes. We tried this thing. There is 5 sections of platform. It's broken up into 5 different sections of platforming. We got in an hour of like doing nothing, like complete fucking silence, trying to lock in. We got past the second one and they got sent way back to the beginning. And it's a thing where both people need to complete it at the exact same time. You have a window of like 10 seconds to be at the end goal together. And if you're not, you get killed. And you have to restart it all over again. So for completing it, I love this. This is some fucking Willy Wonka ass shit. If you complete it, which 2 streamers did, a video of Joseph Ferris, the director of the game, comes onto the screen and basically says, congratulations for beating this. Most people here at the studio cannot beat this level. We are going to fly you, the first people who beat this section, to like Sweden or Switzerland or wherever they're based to come see our next game. And so these two people who beat this, they're like streamers who beat the thing, are going to go fly out to Sweden to see whatever Hazelight is working on next.
How do they find that out? That is awesome.
But so that's the other thing about this is in the video basically says like, you have to let us know that you did this. And whoever's the first person to let us know that you did this.
Oh,
gets
okay.
It,
that makes
which
sense.
Is insane because it's kind of like, shouldn't hate, like, is there not a thing at Hazelight where they're like notified if this happens?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like somebody
that
gets an email,
so
like,
funny.
Oh fuck, boss. Like, yeah, but it is so cute, right? Just like, just a video of Joseph Harris been like, thanks for playing. Thank you for devoting the time to doing this. Please come to, we are going to bring you to Sweden to show what we're working on next.
Well, and it's like, you can't even make that like a achievement because you don't want that to be a trophy if it's that hard.
Yeah. I mean, it's fucking
could,
hard. It's
you
fucking hard.
You
yeah.
could, but like that would ruin people wanting to get the platinum for it.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's cool. Also, some Split Fiction news. Guinness Book of World Records says that Split Fiction has cemented its place in gaming history with a trio of world records. It won a world record for, let's see here, most played local co-op game on Steam, most sold local co-op video game on Steam, most sold co-op local co-op video game within 1 week of release. Joseph Ferris tweets it and says, wow, this is a fun surprise. Thanks, everyone. I think this is a cute story. I would like to talk about the Guinness Book of World Records for 1 second. It is a for-profit company that is not that is in the business of selling novelty books, which is great. I like Guinness Book of World Records. I think that's fun. But you have to pay to get the records. So Joseph Ferris being like, this is crazy. I had no idea this happened. Like, maybe he didn't, but like, someone at Hazelight or EA paid for this to happen. So it's not, you know what I mean? I feel like you so rarely hear about world records and the Guinness Book of World Records anymore. You were telling me though, when I put this in, that you have a world record.
I do. I'm a part of a Guinness Book of World Record. Let's go to the year 2014. Where were you in 2014?
I just finished your fucking class. No, that's not true. I was sophomore, junior in high school.
Okay,
so I was at.
So you
at school
you missed
where
this.
You, worked.
You missed this by a year. You could have been a part of this same world record.
Are you
here.
Fucking kidding me? Was this with your students
at the National Speech and Debate Tournament? They made. We got the world record for sending the most text messages of the same message at the same time.
I'm so mad that I didn't, because I was for sure for 2014. I for sure, that was one of the 2 years that I tried to
go
make it on.
Yeah,
on
yeah. So that was
at nationals.
That was your junior year, I think, right?
No, that was my sophomore year.
Sophomore year.
Who was I partnered with? I'm trying to think.
That year?
Come on, doesn't matter.
Yeah, but
it would have been Matt in the regular season, but he that was a whole thing. If you remember.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
So. It was the worst thing ever. Like, because as you said, this is a for-profit company. Yeah. And we were already sitting there. It was like the duo round started late, which is like the awards thing that they were doing. It started late and it was like 9:30 at night. No. This happened before the duo final round. And for those of you who don't know speech, duo is like the thing that everyone goes to because it's like the fun, cool, popular event that literally everyone goes to, from debaters to interpreters. Like, every single person goes to this. So they did it right before the final of duo, except it took about an hour and a half to organize
Good.
This whole thing.
Good.
Because basically everyone in this convention center had to like write their name on this like note, and then they had to like pass it in. They had to tally it. We had to stay in the room. We couldn't leave the room. They had to make sure we were all there. They were trying to organize this with like the MC talking to us in the front. And then it ended up making the duo final an hour and a half later. So these poor kids, it's like 11 o'clock at night. They're doing their final round of duo, which they've worked their whole career for. We get home. It's like midnight. I had to take all the high schoolers that I brought with me to dinner somewhere. Where do you take on a Thursday night? Where do you take like 15 people for dinner at like 12:30?
I got Applebee's.
They were closed. It's a Thursday.
Where did you go?
I don't know. I think we ended up going to like a bad IHOP or something like that, which is now what we do every year after the awards. We go to a bad IHOP. But like,
that's fun.
it, like, that's a fun moment, but it was just such not a fun experience. And even though I have the world record for sending, I believe it was "go all in" was the text message we sent, which could reference a lot of things, to be frank, but apparently it was the theme of that tournament. It was just like not a fun process. And a lot of companies, in fact, hire the Guinness World Records to do it as like a company, like bonding activity. They'll do a world record together.
100%.
That they'll just do something that no one's done before, and then make a thing of it.
Yeah.
Can we start?
What's that?
Can we start an anti-world record company where we break the easy world records that people in the Guinness Book of World Records set just to fuck with them?
That's so fucking funny. If I had a budget for a YouTube channel, that would be a YouTube channel.
Oh my God. That, like, that Mr. Beast. Could you imagine
don't give him the idea. Don't tell him. Okay, I want this. This is for us when the podcast blows up and we get our own private jets. Cause it's like $15,000 to get a Guinness Book World Record, like, adjudicator out there. So okay. We just need that as like the starting point, and then I think we'll make money from there.
I like it. Mr. Beast, if you are listening to this, don't take that idea from us, and please like and subscribe.
Yeah, he's going to do whatever he wants. He's been doing that for a while. Anyway, Justin, I played Assassin's Creed Shadows. I've played about 15 hours of this game.
Whoa!
Was it in the Metacritic roundup last week? I think it was.
It was last week. Yeah, we talked about it. Yeah.
For those who need a quick reminder, it scored an 81 on the PS5, a 79 on the PC, and an 85 in the Xbox Series X. I'm playing it on the PlayStation 5. Justin, this is
more Assassin's Creed.
Yes and no. Okay. And yes and mostly yes.
Okay.
I guess I don't even know where to start, man. This game is like...
Start with this.
Yeah.
Are you having fun?
Yeah. Sometimes. Sometimes I am.
Okay.
I am sometimes. I'll tell you what this game is really good at. The stealth mechanics in this game are better than they have been in a really long time. Where, like, there is a reliance on using stealth, which has simply not been in this game series for over a decade. You know what I mean? Like, Origins came out in 2017. That's almost 10 years ago, right? Like, this series has given up on being about stealthy guys coming in and cutting people's throats out. Mm-hmm. This game has gone back to that sometimes, which that's the really fun part. There are castles all over the map that you can go and stealth around, and your objective is to like kill as many samurai as you can. Every single time you kill a samurai, you get a skill point, which I think is a cool way of like, all right, you want to upgrade your shit? Go find some fucking dudes to kill, which is like, I think that's a great system. The stealthing in those castles, I think, is really good. That is the really fun part of the game. Unfortunately, that is like, maybe, if I'm being generous, 20% of it. Mm. And the rest is just the open world bullshit. The rest is the story that I've never dropped off a story in an Assassin's Creed game so fast. Holy shit, I am so uninterested in this story. And yeah, I'm not trying to sound like too negative on it. I wish this was better. I wish this game was better. Does that make sense?
So from what you're saying, its biggest fault is that it's just more of the same.
Yeah.
Or is there something else wrong with it on top of that?
It's been more than 4 years since Assassin's Creed Valhalla came out, since I played that game. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember if this is how it is or not. But since then, I have played a lot of great open world games. And I think, like, obviously the games to compare this to is Ghost of Tsushima because of the Japanese, you know, setting and all that sort of stuff and the samurai stuff. But, like, I just think that Ghost of Tsushima, yes, we can compare it like that. But the real comparison for me is, like, just Ghost of Tsushima is, in my idea of, like, the ideal version of what all open world games are, where the world is interesting to explore and the game is designed around, like, finding stuff in the world. For example, that game, if I'm remembering correctly, does not have waypoints, right? It just has the wind that just guides you to the thing. And then as you're going, you're like, oh my gosh, like a cat just ran by here. And when you see a cat running around, you know that you got to follow the cat and it's going to bring you to a thing. You know what I mean? Like, and so that makes it interesting to explore all sections of the world and to you know, keep your wits about you, to be like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Or to maybe not fast travel everywhere because there's stuff that you're going to miss in between there and then. And that makes the world fun to explore and engaging to explore. In this game, you climb up to a synchronization point. It does the, you know, the cinematic zoom around, and then it just populates the map with question marks, not with actual specifically here's what the thing is. And so that was is Assassin's Creed, its idea of like, this is how we're going to make it more interesting by not telling you what the thing is going to be when you get there. And that sucks.
That's like the worst answer, because like then it's like,
because now I get there and I'm like, oh, there is like not, there's nothing here. Sometimes it's just a thing that they design, like just like, oh, it's a shrine. And even the shrines, there's stuff to do. But like sometimes it's just like, oh, it's just a unique looking building, which is cool, I suppose. But is there anything to do here? No. Okay, why did I run 300 meters in this direction? You know, and then in between points of interest, you know, it's a beautiful landscape. There's nothing. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to see. And like I said, with the Ghost of Tsushima comparison, I think that game does a really great job of filling that space by putting something interesting there and making it and making you observe what's going on, because you're like, oh shit, a fox just ran by. I got to follow the fox, you know, or I'm on my way to this objective, but then this other thing showed up. And it's like, it feels like every 90 seconds in that game, you are seeing something that is something. Whereas the time between things in this game is a lot longer, and there's just way less stuff in between those points. Does that make sense?
Yeah. This might be like an unfair question to ask.
Yeah.
Or maybe even an obvious question to answer. What should they do with the next Assassin's Creed game?
I would say make a smaller game. Make a smaller world that is tightly packaged. The problem is, like, there's like tightly packed. The problem is, like, they're sticking with like realism stuff, right? So, like, if I were to, what would I do to fix this game? I would just put all, like, squish it all together. Make the castle on top of the town, which is on top of another castle on the other side of it. And there's, you know, like, all that stuff should just be closer together. And then now you have like interesting stuff all over the place, you know? Or, you know, I'm not a game designer, so this is tough for me to say, but like, come up with a way to make getting around interesting and make the discovery of those things more interesting than the synchronization points. I think the problem with these games is that as much as Assassin's Creed wanted to like redefine itself when Origins came out as like an RPG, right, with like stats and whatever else, they didn't redefine themselves in like mechanical ways that actually mattered. Now in these games, there's just loot everywhere. Every 2 minutes you get a new piece of loot. And I just wrote a feature today. I don't know when it's going up, but I don't fucking understand loot in this game. I have, it's got the typical, like, you know, white is common, green is uncommon, blue is rare, all the way up to legendary, right? I have two types of loot in my inventory. I have white common loot and I have legendary gold loot. And all of the legendary gold loot has been outclassed by white common loot. What the fuck? Why do it like that? Why haven't I found anything in between those two things? You know what I mean? Like, that's so weird. And it doesn't make like progression fun, because like you just have to equip the thing that's the bigger number every single time. You know what I mean? Like, and I guess I understand that, like, a sword that does 1% more damage when this happens is better than a sword that doesn't do that. But is that like an exciting upgrade? No. I feel the same way about like God of War, like Valhalla and the last one, not Ragnarok and the one before that. Like, oh, cool. 2% damage when I'm in this stance. Like, fucking 2%? That's nothing. Like I understand that's better than what I was using. But that's not an interesting, exciting upgrade, you know. So I don't know. I don't know what to do.
I think that makes sense. I condensing it makes sense, because we're talking about a stealth game, a stealth action game. But like, there's so much space between all the stealth action that it becomes this like traversal exploration game rather than a stealth action game. And I think a lot of games would benefit from restraint of how big their maps were, or how much they're doing and stuff like that. Like, I think that would make much more sense. And if you could even like really, really focus on the stealth and have these designed maps of not just like bad AI walking around. You mentioned that the stealth was different in this game, or felt different, or felt refocused. How so?
Because you're actually like incentivized to do it. In Valhalla and what I remember of Odyssey, like you can get in fights with 15 dudes and you're going to win no matter what. Like it's
easier to do that, to be honest.
Correct. And like, I remember I tried to be stealthy in Valhalla and I felt like I was wasting my time because it was like, this game doesn't want me to be stealthy. This game wants me to kick the door in. And I get we're Vikings, so like whatever. But like, I find that to be boring in a game called Assassin's Creed, you know? This one, so you have two characters. You have Yasuke, samurai, and you have Naoe, a ninja. And
neither sound like an assassin, by the way.
Oh, no way. This is like a ninja, like stealthy in the shadows.
Okay. All right.
Ask me how Yasuke is to play.
Not fun.
Would love to know. Haven't fucking found him yet.
You're 15 hours in.
So the framing. Okay. I want to talk about the story and then I'll talk about like how that all feels and works. So the framing of the story starts with Yasuke. He is a slave to these Portuguese like Christians who are looking for safe passage through the land owned by Lord a real historical guy whose name
Farquaad.
Is Naba, I don't remember. He's a guy. This is all apparently happened. And then basically this, it's actually going to bother me if I don't know it. Lord Nab.
Is it Iga Kiki? Oda no. Nabungada?
Oh, that's it. What was it? Nabunaga?
Oda Nabunaga. Nobunaga.
Nobunaga. Nobunaga is his name.
Nobunaga.
Lord Nobunaga basically sees Yasuke, who is a like 6'7" black man, and is basically like, what are you? like this is odd. This is not typical. And basically like the slave owners basically tell him like, do not speak to this man. Like, we are the ones who are doing the negotiation. And then Nobunaga is like, does he speak Japanese? And they're like, no, he can't. And then Yasuke is like, I actually can. And then so he dismisses the slave owners. And he basically talks to Yasuke about like, who are you? Like, you seem like you look so different than us. And he explains like, oh, where I'm from, everyone's black and all this, whatever. And then so Nobunaga basically gives free passage to the slavers, but says, but I'm keeping your slave. And so he appoints Yasuke to being a samurai. That's some of the tutorial. And then that's all I've seen of Yasuke. And then we go and we're with Naoe, and Naoe has the most fucking boring, like cookie cutter ass backstory where her dad's an assassin. Nobunaga is like there's like Japan. I don't know much about Japanese history, but Japan apparently was like broken up into a bunch of different factions. And Nobunaga is one of the like leaders who was like invading all sorts of other places. And so Nobunaga is coming in to invade the Iga, which is where Naoe's from. And her dad is like, here, take this blade. I'm gonna put this on your wrist. It's the hidden blade. Go find this box and protect this box with your life. And then her dad, spoilers, gets killed, and the box gets taken from her by a group of guys and gals wearing those like kabuki masks. And her goal is to go kill all of them. Now that sounds pretty like, all right, you know, that's pretty like standard, but like not uninteresting. That is told over the course of like 7 hours. Like it is so dry and it's stiff. The writing's bad. The voice acting is not great. And also, yeah, that's interesting enough. But to be honest, the thing I'm more interested in is like, what's it like to be this man who does not who does not blend in at all? You know what I mean? Like, who is like this very odd person? You know what I mean? Like that's a really interesting story, and that's a really interesting like character idea. Not idea that he's fucking existed, but like I'm interested in seeing where that goes and like how he feels about all that. And I just haven't seen him.
Is Nobunaga a bad guy? Is he a bad guy?
I guess it depends on what you mean by that. In the game, he's not portrayed as that yet. But he's a conqueror, right? So like I guess technically he is to Nawe. So I think there's going to be some sort of disagreement between Nawe and Yasuke at some point, because Yasuke is one of Nobunaga's samurai, right? He seems of dubious, like, what would you say, like, intention. You know what I mean? About, like, he's a conqueror. He's going to kill people. But also, like, I don't know if that's being viewed as bad in these games, because, like, that's what the main characters are, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah. I'm just reading this line from, because I was like, as you were talking, I was looking at the original characters and like where they like tie into like the history. And Yasuke's apparently was a samurai for Nobunaga, and yep. Nobunaga was on the verge of unifying the country, but died in an unexpected rebellion.
Oh. Maybe that's something that we get to be a part of, or what? I don't know. I also don't know if it's like if it's unifying or if it's like unifying. You know what I mean? Like unifying like by showing up and killing that. Everyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and like maybe that whole thing is how like did I kill it?
Yeah,
there's a bug. Yeah. How Yasuke like went from being his samurai to like turning on him and becoming an assassin to take him down because he was really up to no good.
Yeah, I'll say this though. So they play differently, apparently. In the tutorial with Yasuke, you are like you're a tank. You are just like busting through doors and stuff like that. And like, come fucking fight me. Whereas Nawe is not that way. She is in the shadows and she gets overwhelmed by enemies very easily. And so the emphasis in the game is on stealth and, you know, staying out of sight. The cool thing is they sort of like talked about this in some of the preview stuff where like she... if you are in a dark area, but you're not covered up, you are still hidden. And you can tell because like when you're hidden, you have like this like white outline around you. But like if you take out a lamp, you can sneak up on an enemy and they will not see you because you took the lamp out, even though you're like not in the bushes or anything like that. So that's kind of cool.
Like that. She's also, I like that. Is there a like a meter for that?
Yeah, there's like a detection meter and stuff like that. But she's got a grappling hook too, which makes her like super... she can climb stuff way easier and then also like swing on stuff. And there's like a lot of like those like sort of like swing points basically. So you can like traverse rooftops a lot easier, which to my understanding, Yasuke cannot do. I also saw that he like, you know, in Assassin's Creed, it's like super common that there's like a rope connecting a building to another building and you can just like run across it. Nawe can do that. But if Yasuke does that, the rope will break.
Oh, I love that.
I like that. Yeah, but I also haven't gotten to that. You know what I mean? So I don't know, like I find her to be boring. Her voice actress is very, very stiff. I also, to me, and Assassin's Creed has always done this, but I think it's maybe the way that the performances are. It feels a little bit like watching the like teaching DVD that came with my Japanese book in college when I was taking it. You know what I mean? Where it was like, good morning, Chi-Chi. How are you doing today? You know what I mean? Like that's how like the delivery is. And like the Japanese words that they incorporate are like, you know, it's not that they don't feel natural in terms of like being in the scene, because like that's how they've always done it, right? They did that with Italian. They did that with like Greek and stuff like that. But it comes like the way it's like said feels like, let me go find my katana. You know what I mean? Like I knew that was a Japanese word. Don't worry. I got it. You know? Does that kind of make sense? Like it feels stiff. It feels stiff, and the stealth is good, but everything around the stealth is not good. It's just like tedious, and it makes me want to do just the stealth. But like to get to the stealth stuff, I have to do all sorts of other stuff. There's like a whole base building mechanic too that seems like it's going to be central to this game, which is kind of cool. But also like I have to go back and read all the tutorials because I think I just skipped through them because I was like, please let me play, you know. That makes sense.
Oh yeah, yeah. It just seems like they want it to be a game that you play forever instead of just being a game that you play.
Yeah. And like I get Assassin's Creed has to be big. I get that's just what they expect now. But I think like we were saying, you asked like, what can they do to fix this? And I think it's like, strip away some of the things that you think have to be in Assassin's Creed. You know, you have to get up and do the synchronization points. Okay, sure. Climbing tall stuff and looking around, that is a staple of Assassin's Creed. But what happens when you get up there? They have decided, they're like, well, we're not going to show you what it is that you find. Okay, that doesn't work. Can you come up with a different thing that happens? Maybe that's how you level up. You know what I mean? Maybe that's the only way you can upgrade your abilities. Maybe there's like a skill tree that you're having to choose from. Because there are skill trees in this. Because these are RPGs now. But like, do something interesting with that. You know what I mean? Like, play around with what that is. And then you can make it more interesting by adding this, that, whatever. I'm playing it. The combat's better, by the way, than Valhalla. It's more nuanced. Good. I'm playing it. I got a copy from Ubisoft, so thank you very much for sending it to me. I'm sorry that all I do is just shit on this game. It's not terrible, and I think, you know, the recommendation is like, if you like Assassin's Creed, you will like this. But I also kind of feel like, should we not want more out of these games in this studio? Like, I don't think it's ridiculous to say to expect more out of a studio that has been making these games for fucking ever. And
the time off clearly didn't help them innovate again.
Well, I mean, I feel like they tried some stuff with Valhalla and that stuff didn't work. And so with this, I was excited to see what they did instead, but they kind of just went back to doing Odyssey, you know? Mm. And like, there are some interesting things. Like I said, like the Yasuke Naoe dynamic, I bet is cool. And being able to switch off between the two of them sounds kind of neat, depending on like what sort of play style you're feeling. But like, would love to get to that part. Would love, yeah. Again, 15 hours. Would love to see what this guy's up to. Because also, like I said, that's the interesting story. Like, the story about just like a lady who loses her dad is just like so like, okay, yeah, you're a video game protagonist. Your dad's going to die. Like, I don't know. You know, like, like, yeah, it's called the prologue now. I like, get over it.
You need a reason.
Yeah, whereas like Yasuke, like immediately it starts and you're like, oh, this is like an interesting dynamic, like that's yeah. Cool, you know. Or like I said, he doesn't fit in. And like when you get to this Nobunaga, when you get to his place, which is like, it's like the first scene in the game, you're like walking through the town and everyone's like literally dropping what they're doing to look at you, and it's like, that's interesting, like that's a very interesting thing.
That's,
you know,
something that's happened to you.
Yeah, like that seems cool as a concept for a game, and as a concept especially of a game where the point is to be discreet, you know. And it's like, how do you have a guy who sticks out more than anyone else in the whole fucking country be discreet? I don't know. I think that's a cool concept. When does he come back? like where did he go? Where did he go?
I hope it's better than Xenoblade Chronicles X, that when you finally do get your big mech, when you finally get your Yasuke, it actually is worth it. Not just disappointing, more of the same.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. So there you go. That's Assassin's Creed Shadows. I will hopefully play up. I'm going to get to Yasuke. Like, I have to get to Yasuke. I'm interested. And also,
Do you think he's going to kill her? What if? And then you can't be her anymore. Then it's just,
that'd be kind of cool.
But they wouldn't do that. That's too,
no, absolutely not.
It's too controversial. It's too Last of Us Part 2.
Maybe they make you choose which one you get to play. It's like at the end of Nier Automata. You get to choose which one you want to be, and you fucking kill the other one.
Or the beginning of Wolfenstein.
Yeah, or the end of Brothers. Not Brothers. A Way Out. Spoilers.
Oh, I didn't get there, but I don't think I ever will.
Nah, it's okay. That's okay. Justin, you want to talk about the news?
Let's do it!
You watched that Nintendo Direct, Justin?
I did.
I also watched it. The final
Non-stop
Nintendo Direct.
Goodness. Non-stop goodness. It seems goodness. Like.
And now, here's the thing. I have thoughts and feelings about this Direct. And I'm sure you do, too. This was announced like kind of like last minute. They were like, hey, tomorrow there's a Direct happening. And everyone was like, I thought there was a Direct happening on next Wednesday. And they were like, there also is a Direct happening next Wednesday. This was for the Switch. They basically said, like, we are not going to talk about the Switch 2. This is for the Switch. I think that's kind of cool that they recognize, like, we have a huge fucking install base. Not all these people are going to go and get the Switch 2 right away. We need to support this console with games still. And, like, there are games that are launching in 2026 that are is were announced here or shown off here and stuff like that. And I just think that's cool. I mean, like, obviously, like, generations tend to, like, have a little bit of overlap and like that. You know, like, we looked at, like, PS4 games stopped coming out, like, last year, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it's cool that they are interested in supporting those people, because they could very easily just say, fuck you, go buy Switch 2, you know, but they are not doing that. So, in general, I think we can talk about some of these, like, some of the trailers and things they showed off. But in general, it sounds like you didn't really like it that much.
I mean, it was fine. I think it comes down to the big meat and potatoes here, not to, like, bury the lead, but it's Metroid Prime 4, I think, is, like, the big announcement here. Not that it's, like, anew, but, like, the gameplay that they showed.
Yes. So they showed off that Metroid has the ability to open doors and interact with items. A bunch of people were talking about this, that, like that's fucking so funny. That the big thing that they're showing off is she can open doors with her like telekinetic hands, and it's like, yeah, man, Link was doing this like a year ago. like this is, I'm sure there's more to this, but yes, Metroid Prime 4, I don't know, it looks good, looks like more Metroid Prime, which is not like, it's not, I don't mean that as a knock, I just mean that as like, so
you know,
far,
what it is.
Yes, and it does not look like it's going to be a departure for that or anything like that. Does this get you excited for Metroid Prime 4?
No, I don't know what could have gotten me excited for it. I don't know if this open world Metroidvania is what I need right now. I would much rather to be that person, have another 2D one, would be much...
Watching this, I'm just like, damn, I wish they made a sequel to Metroid Dread.
Right? Like
that game was fucking
me,
rips.
That would be a lot more desirable than this. And, like, even the joke about, like, opening the doors and, like, things like that with your hand and stuff, like, I get that because I see how those mechanics could be added to a Metroidvania to be interesting,
yes,
and, like, and fun in a certain way. But I don't know. Metroid Prime was one of those games that when it first came out, I was disappointed with because I wanted, like, a shooter. And that was, like, in my shooter phase. And it wasn't a shooter. And then when I went to play it a little bit later when I bought it for the Wii, I was like, oh, this is actually, yeah, it's a first-person shooter, but it's just a first-person Metroidvania. And I was kind of like, I got it, and I saw what they wanted me to see. And I was like, all right, I could see myself getting into this. But I don't know. It's just never one of those things that would excite me, per se. And these new abilities, like the psychic abilities and things like that, I don't think that's the thing I need to be excited by this either.
Yes, 100%. Like so far, this is like, I think we can assume that this is coming to the Switch too, right?
I would assume both, right?
Yes, this is this is a cross generational thing. I think that you are right though, but like it looks like it looks like it's a first person shooter, but it's not, right? It's a Metroidvania, and that excites me a little bit less than I would be super stoked on. That said, if it uses something interesting about the Switch 2's hardware, I will be much more interested in playing this. But because it's coming to both, it makes me think that it won't.
Yeah, and like on top of that too, the Switch, I know it's not a first-person shooter, but you're controlling it first-person. The Switch is not a place.
That's not good for it.
To play first-person.
Wolfenstein 2 is on fucking Switch.
I'm sure that plays great.
It's got to be awesome, right? Just like
whenever there's like a really gory scene, do they just put like a picture of Mario on there?
Yeah, I was gonna say,
like,
I thought
Yoshi?
That they had some like, they had some regulations about like what could be on the Switch and not. That game is like as mature as it gets.
They tone down the chunks when the heads get cut
open. Oh, sure. And go,
yeah,
yay!
Less fewer chunks. Yeah.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You get the coin sound or the Goomba jump sound whenever you kill someone.
Sure.
Yeah.
This was like the big one, but also they kind of just threw it in the middle because it wasn't even what they ended with.
Right.
They ended with, what is this? Tobodachi Life. Living
the
dream.
Creepiest, dumbest, weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life, and for this to be like their like big thing at the end,
they were like, one more thing, Tomodachi Life, and people were stoked. I never played the original on the 3DS, I think, or maybe it was on the Wii. It's been a long time. This is the second game in this series. And it's coming out in 2026. So like that, they were also like, this is not this year. So that's why what I'm saying about like, it's cool that they're supporting this console. Did you play the original?
No, I couldn't. I'd have nightmares. They all scare me with their faces. And just when I thought I got past it, they have that really weird ending.
The giant
with
one.
The giant one. I'm like, the fuck are you trying to like give me nightmares? Like, this is like nightmare fuel. Like, this is how you ended it. Your last one ever. And it's with this creepy giant with her dead ass eyes looking at this other thing with dead ass eyes. Like,
did you see they apologized? Do you know anything about Tomodachi Life 1?
No.
So it came out in like 2014, I think. And the big controversial thing is it's a life sim, right? Or it's like Sims, right? But you like put your friends in, you make Miis about your friends, basically, and you have them all live together. They did not allow like same sex relationships and stuff like that in the game, which, you know, that is like, I understand that not all old games have that. But by like 2013, 2014, like you're a little late to the party. You know what I mean? And so they recently apologized, saying like, we are very sorry that the game did not include that. This new one will, which I think is kind of sweet. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, especially because that was so much of the conversation surrounding that game. But like, that's one of the few things I know about that game is like, oh, this got kind of handled poorly. And for them to say like, we made a mistake and we have fixed it in the sequel, I think is kind of cool.
I mean,
I'm not gonna play it, but
right. What if this is like our game of the year in 2026,
dude? If you remember, I was like, I don't want to fucking play Metroid Dread, and then I was like, Justin, have you played Metroid Dread? And you're like, yes, it's amazing. So who knows? Maybe it's Tomodachi Life in 2026. What else was in here?
The thing that I found to be interesting, if we're gonna take something away, was their the cards, the sharing of your games.
Oh, yes. This was weird. So they basically announced like, hey, we know that like digital libraries are difficult to sort of manage. And I also think they were getting ahead of the idea of like, OK, Switch 2 is going to have, you know, play Switch games. How do you deal with like sharing games that you bought digitally? And they basically just came up with like digital game cards. It's not that I didn't pay attention. I just like kind of didn't follow it initially and then was kind of lost. But I was also like, this doesn't matter to me because I don't share these sorts of things right now. You know what I mean? Like no one else is on my account or anything like that.
So the things I took away from this and why I think I don't know if it's a good idea, but at least it's trying to simplify things to make it make sense. Mm-hmm. Have you ever dealt with dealing with two Switches that you own?
I mean, I've got the Switch Lite and the Switch OLED and the other one.
And it can be a pain to find out what game is where. And this one basically says you can have the ownership to two Switches pretty easily as a game card that you just transfer between the two. So it's pretty clear to do. And as long as you have the two things next to each other, you can easily transfer them, which doesn't really help you if you're like on a plane with one of them and you're like, I really want to play Zelda right now. But like you're kind of stuck in a place now where if you don't have the internet hooked up to them, it's hard to play those games anyway.
Yeah.
So the cool thing is that you can load them on a second console. The second thing is like the renting to your friends, or not your friends per se.
Oh, it was like the people on your plan, right?
The people like on your plan.
Yeah, go
on. You can basically give them a game for 2 weeks. And then after 2 weeks, it gets automatically sent back to you, or you could just re-up it and keep doing it. And this is something that actually is kind of great for, I'm thinking of this specific use case of my wife and I, when I'd want her to play some games, but like, I'm not going to have her spend $60 on Pikmin 3, right?
Yes.
But like she could play it and see if she likes it. And if she likes it, she can just keep playing it, renting it, or eventually buy it on her own if that's what she wants, which I think is kind of a cool thing. And specifically, if you have kids, you don't have to buy four of the same copy of everything if they are on your plan and stuff like that. So I don't know. I think to me, the way they explained it and the way they set it up is one of the first times that this kind of made sense in a way that seems really clear to me. Mm-hmm. And it looks pretty straightforward and pretty simple with how to do. I'm sure there'll be Nintendo jank with this stuff because the one thing Nintendo sucks at is anything online. But like, I think this is them trying to solve it, and their whole like making the digital game cards and like the visual of them putting the game in the Switch kind of makes sense. So maybe they finally discovered what to do and how to share your digital games with people.
I hope this works well, and I hope this makes the transition to the Switch 2 as seamless as possible, because it is not seamless right now.
This should be so confusing. Yes. That's what I'm really worried about. How am I going to get my games from my Switch to my Switch 2?
Yes, 100%. Especially with just how many digital things I own and whatever else. I'm trying to think. Was there anything else here that was interesting? Oh, they announced that they have an app now, a new app. A Nintendo Today, which then they announced that the Legend of Zelda movie is coming in 2026. They announced the release date on that app.
Boo.
I have a theory about this app, and I wrote about this. So I called this Nintendo's Jeremy Renner app.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you know the Jeremy Renner app?
No.
Oh my gosh, dude, really? In 2017, Jeremy Renner had an app made for him that basically just like consolidates all of his social media posts. So it's all just for Jeremy Renner fans. So it's like, if you want to just keep up to date with Jeremy Renner.
Is it still there?
No, it got taken down because what you could do, basically it was also a way for him to like interact with his biggest fans. And so people would make accounts pretending to be Jeremy Renner. And
that's funny.
It was one of those things that like this sort of thing probably was not meant to be as popular as it was, because it was just so fucking silly about like, because this is not like other celebs have done this, but it's just like it blew up because it's just like, why the fuck does Jeremy Renner have his own app? You know what I mean? That's like, it's just silly. But so like, this is the same thing where it's like, they're just going to consolidate as much of their news as they possibly can. But my theory, and I wrote about this week, is like the reason they're doing this is because Twitter is no longer the way that most people communicate from companies, right? And I think that Nintendo, who has a very family-friendly image, you know, whether you believe it or not, Elon Musk is not a family-friendly person. And the fact that he's the face of this brand, and the fact that this brand is full of people doing hate speech and full of like scammers and stuff like that, doesn't jive with Nintendo really at all. One, and two, a lot of Nintendo fans have left Twitter, right? Like, so it's this sort of thing, like, how do you reach people? Because there's not been like a new social media app. You know, obviously like a lot of people went to like Blue Sky and stuff like that, but like, it's not the next Twitter. You know what I mean? Like, it's in terms of like the amount of users and stuff like that. So like, what do you do? And I think the solution they came up with was, we're just gonna have one app to just consolidate all of our information, which I think is a great plan for a company like them, especially that has like diehard super fans, where like, okay, cool, you can get like sort of drip fed information every single day about, you know, updates to games and like little bits of like dev information and stuff like that. I don't know. I think it's kind of an interesting idea, but what do you think?
This is going to sound worse than I mean it to, because I think, okay, like, I understand why this, and I'm not mad at this. Like, we're to an age though, where like, when everybody has a voice, nobody has a voice.
Uh-huh.
And like, it's the issue with streaming services, with social media. Like, you don't just have one social media where everyone's on anymore.
Yep.
There are 10, 5, yep. There are a couple major ones that it's just really hard to reach people and find out where the best time to put your time and energy on, because social media is not as simple as copy and pasting one post to a different website. Like, each social media has its own like way of going about it and like dealing with it and like interacting with like users and things like that, and the kind of content that you should put on it. And like, it's just not cost effective for companies to be present on every single social media. And they're not reaching enough people on these social media. So I think like something like this makes sense. But now the problem is every company, are you going to get the Ubisoft Today app? Are you going to get the Xbox Today app, the PlayStation Today app, and all this kind of stuff? It's just making it harder for consumers to get information and find out like to be up to date on this kind of stuff, which is more of a commentary on media in general. As traditional media is slowly but surely dying out and more independent voices are coming out there. Just because you're an independent voice with a microphone and a podcast doesn't mean you're an expert on that area or that field or that topic or that whatever. So yeah. I don't know. I think your theory makes total sense. And I think that like that's a smart thing for Nintendo to do. And Nintendo just has a charm with it. I mean, like, look at this. Look how sweet that looks.
Did nice you download and simple. It? Yeah.
Yeah, I got my little date on there, a little Mario. Seems simple enough. You attach your Nintendo account stuff to it and everything is just there. But yeah.
Yeah, I think it's I think you're right about like, yeah, it is difficult to know what to do if you're a company because of the way social media has splintered and the fact that so many people are kind of just uninterested in being on social media right now. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, oh, well, how do you communicate to people? And it's like, well, what if we just had our own app, right? And I think you're right too, but like, well, so what? Does every company get an app? And the answer is going to be yes. But is that sustainable for every company? And the answer is no. Is it sustainable for Nintendo? Yes. Yes.
Yeah, Nintendo.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. So, yeah, so there you go. Anything else from this Nintendo Direct that sort of stuck out to you?
A little bit more on Legends Arceus. Legends ZA. Kind of makes me still a little bit nervous about it. I don't know if I love it all being in a city. I hope there'd be some more outside of the city stuff that we get to some more biomes and stuff like that. Still haven't seen that, so I don't know if that's going to be the case, but it's starting to be a bit better picture in my head. And the thing I like about it is it seems like it is going to have a much bigger focus on combat than the last one. Combat was such an afterthought. Yes. This one, it seems like combat, they have leagues, ranks, everything like that, that it is going to be a lot more trainer battles than just random outside things. So I'm excited for that because that's what I think really lacked in Legends Arceus. So Legends ZA hopefully will fix that problem.
Yeah, I agree. I'm interested in this Pac-Man game, Shadow Labyrinth, where it's like Pac-Man as... Do you see this? It's Pac-Man as a Metroidvania. Uh-huh. They really revealed this at the Game Awards. I don't know. There wasn't much else to this, but just like... That's a weird idea. I think that's cool. I'm interested in the idea of like we took this classic retro, you know, title and like made something weird with it. Cool. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Is it gonna be good? I don't know. But I'm like, at the very least, like that's something. That's kind of interesting. So
yeah.
That's about it for the Nintendo Direct. Justin, PlayStation had a blog post update.
I like them.
You do. For Ghost of Yote, it's not a blog post update, rather. It's just that like the Ghost of Yote, like page, I think got updated where there's just a little bit of information about like what the game kind of looks like. Very standard stuff, about like what to expect from this game. But the thing about this is it says that it releases in 2025, which I mean, hey, I would love that. I think if this game comes out in 2025, it's going to show Ubisoft how it's done a little bit. You know what I mean? Like there'll be unfortunate timing, I think, for Ubisoft. That said, I mean, the game is selling fine. It's past 3 million sales and all that sort of stuff. Like it's selling very well, but like we were talking about with just like this game gets a lot, Ghost of Tsushima gets so much right about being an open world game that I think this game is only going to just be better.
One of the sole reasons I put this on the dock was because of the release date, because that is unnecessary to have a release date on there if it wasn't coming out in 2025.
If it wasn't going to happen this year, yes.
Yeah, like that would be an easy thing for them to wait. But the fact that it's on there, to me, that pretty much confirms that it is coming out this year for me.
Yes.
It might get pushed back. Who fucking knows? But I'm excited. And I'm also excited that we still haven't seen too much of it at this point. So
do you need more?
No. Like, that's the thing. Like, I don't need it to be like a media, like, just like bludgeon me over the head with this game. Yep. I know what it's going to be. It looks stunning. It looks beautiful. More gameplay that I like already. And I bet you any money they're going to make it better than the original.
Yes. Which that game was fucking great. The game is
right,
so good.
That's the thing. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I think is cool about, like, you know, we talk a lot about how like studios get better when they release games. And how it's such a shame when a studio gives it the chance to make one game and then gets closed down or that team gets dissolved or whatever, because it's like they didn't get the chance to innovate and to learn lessons from that game. But, you know, the one that is just like top of the mind for me is like Stellar Blade, that studio. I said this before, I'll say it again. The studio that made Stellar Blade is going to make a really good game, I think, next. They made a fine game this time, but I think they're going to hopefully learn a lot from making that game. When the bar is Ghost of Tsushima as like, okay, this is the game that we're going to learn from our mistakes from. And the mistakes are, oh, this game is fucking phenomenal. It makes me I don't need more. I need the trailer. I didn't even need a trailer. I just need like Ghost of Yote release date. I'm like, I'll buy it. Doesn't matter. I'll buy it because of how much I liked that other game. That's how I feel about like Baldur's Gate or Larian. Like whatever they do next, I kind of don't need a trailer for, like, or like, I don't need like an extended look at. I just want to know when it's coming out and I will be playing it. because you've established that you can make great stuff.
Yep. And like a game that was made well and was a success both critically and just for like that company.
Yeah.
Them being able to do all the stuff that they had to leave on the cutting room floor for that second game, having the knowledge and the experience of the previous one, like you're only going to get the best possible experience.
It makes me think of for Spider-Man. In the first game, they were going to have the wingsuit and they just didn't have the time and the budget for figuring out how to make it work. And they kind of were like, save it for the sequel, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And then that was an idea that was implemented in the sequel and it was really interesting. And what was cool about that is like, oh, there was a sense of elevation and like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, this second game plays differently because it has this feature that didn't make it in the first one, but they've been thinking about it since they were working on the first one. So I'm so excited to see what comes with this one, but
yep. Way better game too.
Yeah. Hideo Kojima tweeted out, the number of Death Stranding players has exceeded 20 million. Thank you very much. Sams all over the world are still delivering. You are connecting the world. With an image saying we celebrate 20 million players. Thank you to all the Sams, which I think is cute. I want to play this game. I realized I don't have this game. I do not have
it. You don't have PS Plus?
It wasn't on PS Plus collection.
And
the reason why is because when the PS5 came out, Ghost of Tsushima and this game were not on the PS Plus collection because they were doing the director's cut update versions to them. So I am still like, it's coming at the end of June, right?
I think, yeah.
I think in May is when I'm going to try and play the first one.
Okay.
Or do I just not? And do I make a video or like an article about like, I didn't play the first one. This is what it was like.
You could.
I could, but I think I'm going to get a better experience if I do it the other way. If I play the first one.
Yeah, but also like telling you to play that game in a month, I don't know if that's like the best way to play that game. Playing that game on a timeline is not going to make you enjoy that game. And okay. to be honest, is playing that game going to make the story make that much more sense?
I'm sure some. I'm sure some sense.
Yeah.
Daniel Ahmad, he's a games industry analyst. He quote tweeted Kojima, and I think this is really interesting and something that we've talked about on their show before. He tweeted, worth noting that this game had sold less than 5 million copies prior to the PC, PS Plus, PS5, Xbox Series X/S, Mac releases. Making the game more accessible has led to 20 million plus players experiencing the IP prior to the launch of its sequel that will require players to own a PS5 to play at launch. So like just saying like, hey, when people let games go multi-platform, they reach a wider audience. This is the strategy Xbox is having, right? With Starfield or whatever the hell, Indiana Jones, stuff like that. More people are going to play this game when it's available other places. And it means that when the sequel comes out and is an exclusive for a console timed exclusive for a console, if you want to play that game that bad, you're going to have that console. I think that's an interesting point. Congratulations. Yeah, it's all the same.
I mean, why wouldn't companies want it to get on more places? It makes total sense too. I mean, even looking at Sony, their exclusives going on the PC. Why are they doing that?
Because
it's a good idea. You know, it makes them money. More people play the game.
I'll tell you why they're not doing that. Because they love making games for PC that work at launch. Every single time one of those games comes out, the headline is like, Days Gone, worst PC launch for Sony ever. Spider-Man 2, worst PC launch for God of War Ragnarok, worst PC. Like, just why? Last story here, Shuhei Yoshida. I'm just going to read you this tweet. This is from at Genki_JPN. Tweets, Shuhei Yoshida says, Nier Automata was the game that revived the Japanese games industry after it struggled chasing overseas trends in the PS3 era. This is a quote from Yoshida. I think Yoko Taro made it without thinking whether or not it would sell overseas. However, it was a huge hit overseas. From there, it became clear that Japanese creators were making Japanese things, and those things were selling overseas. Everyone realized that with Nier. It wasn't just a matter of saying, it's okay to do it like that, but we have to do it like that. So the direction of Japanese creators became, let's stop imitating overseas countries anymore. If we create things with our own culture and that we understand, they will understand it overseas. I think the Japanese games industry was revived after Nier so much so that I would say it was before So much so that I would say it was before Nier and after Nier. To put it simply, I think Nier Automata was the title that made people realize, let's make something Japanese. I think that's kind of interesting. And I think that makes a lot of sense when looking at sort of like the trajectory of Japanese games. A lot of them were trying to imitate, more Western like gaming trends. And we see how prolific Japanese culture is within at least America, right? Like, I don't know if it's 100% because of Nier. I think there were a lot of circumstances with that, but like, I certainly think it could have been a factor. What do you think?
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, I don't know the numbers. So like, I would trust Shuhei more than me on this, because he's the one seeing the numbers. He's the one that's been dealing in the industry, like from a business perspective. And the reason I say my opinion is that I don't know if Nier necessarily did it is because look at a game like Final Fantasy. What happened to that game? It's become much more influenced by Western RPGs than JRPGs. I think maybe you could talk about Nier Automata being like the first point of this evolution, but like after playing Nier Replicant is almost the same game as Nier Automata.
In what way?
The combat, the way it plays, that
sure,
kind of thing.
Sure, sure, yeah.
I think what makes Nier Automata special and stand out to me is the story. I mean, what kind of story? Like, I cannot think of a story that is told in the way that Nier Automata told that story. Like, it is so deep, so layered, so creative, so uniquely Nier Automata that even other Nier games don't hold a candle to it in the same way. So, like, did it save Japanese gaming? I don't know, but maybe it was like a game that hit the mainstream culture because, I mean, I played that game and I wouldn't say I have been this like Japanese video game connoisseur, but that game hit the mainstream enough that people talk about it. But I don't know. I think the trends tell me that the way that Japanese RPGs have evolved, at least the mainstream ones, have been to not be Western, but have more Western elements in how you play them. I mean, look at Final Fantasy 16 if you're, if you really want to see that kind of like influence, because that game is not a traditional Japanese. Well, I mean, it does have the Devil May Cry feel to it more so than not.
Yeah, but it has that Western fantasy.
The Western fantasy feeling to it. Yeah, so I don't know. I think it's an interesting perspective. And again, I would trust his opinion more than mine because he did see it. And I think that's great for him to talk about Nier with such like fondness. And not only that, putting on this kind of pedestal, because I do think this game is special. Nier Automata is not a game you get every year. And
in fact, I don't think we've gotten Nier Automata since.
No,
more,
absolutely
please.
Not.
I want more, please, please.
I would say like a game like Elden Ring is like one of those like Nier Automata type of games.
Yes, you're right. I guess I meant like I just want more. I want more of that. I want more of that specifically. But
I mean, have you just gone to Google Images and typed in Nier Automata recently, and then like plus Rule 34?
What does plus do?
I don't know. Just plus Rule 34 plus Nier Automata. Look at this cultural influence here.
Oh my gosh. That made me cross my legs. That made me blush, Justin. I'm no prude. And again,
like that's mainstream right there. You tell me that right now. Come on.
Yeah. So there you go. Justin, I think that's where I'm going to call it quits with this episode today. Hey, thanks so much for listening. We just want to remind you can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham. Again, we're talking about the Nintendo Switch 2 Direct this week. It's gonna be like, if you want to hear our thoughts on that right away, be there, you know. If not, we are going to talk about it next week, but a little bit more abridged, I imagine. If not, that's fine. Remember, we're on Twitter at Hitbox Pod. Rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, am I forgetting anything?
You're just forgetting how awesome you are. And you're also forgetting to clear your browsing history.
Oh, I did that in incognito. Are you fucking kidding me? Well, yeah, let those ads for whatever pillows and whatnot. Yeah, all right, man. All right, we'll catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
I'll stop recording.